I will go around and say hello to everyone, starting with Coral and Tyler, Jeff, Young, Marv, Dave, Joan, Paul, Sydney, Yeshe Soki, Jinryu, Sam, Susan, Gathel, Jill, Deborah, Bob, Jim, Mark Cole, Mark W, Drew, Ruth Ann, and Claudia. All right. So let's see. In terms of announcements, still time to sign up for the term student program, which will start on September 12th. So not this Saturday, but the Saturday after. And that's, you sign up for, you commit to the opening retreat and the closing retreat. Opening retreat will be on September 12th. It's basically go from about 8:30 to noon. Closing retreat will be on December 19th from about 8:30 to noon. And then in between, it's encouraged if you attend one or both of the one-day retreats, but it's not required. And you form a set of practice vows that you choose, and then, you know, commit to holding those as best you can throughout. And we usually have some email check-ins in between. So if you were curious about that, please go ahead and email me, and or check out the term student page on the website. You can get to it through the link in the top menu. All right. I think that's it. Can anybody else think of anything? I know we were thinking of doing a Sangha picnic, and Linda sent out a poll on the email list. So the Bright Ways and Sangha email list. So if you didn't see that, then, you know, try to look through your emails maybe and see that, because then there's a little poll that says what day would be the best. But also just keep an eye out and we'll pick a day and you'll see if you can make it. And we'll probably have it at the same place where we had Jukai, which is in Cedar Hills Park near my house. All right. So tonight, continuing with our book from the Zen Kitchen to Enlightenment, How to Cook Your Life by Dogen and Uchiyama. And this chapter is called Working with Clear Vision. So the first part of it is really about more about life's calculations. And in particular, he was talking about the instructions that Dogen gives about the Tenzo trying to figure out how much food to make, and thinking about the monastery and how many people are in the monastery and what kind of people they are and how much they might eat and what was the last meal they just had, and all these different things that go into deciding how much food to make. And I, you know, can speak to this from my own experience as a Tenzo, that it's like, I'm sure there's other jobs that are like this as well, but this is just such a classic example of where you have to employ your intellect, you have to make calculations, but then you, like, there's so many factors, there's so many things going on that you have to trust as well, just kind of trust your intuition and let the energy flow through you. So it's that kind of flow type of thing, where, you know, it's like every part of you is engaged. It's not like you, you know, go intuitive and forget the calculations about numbers of people and portions and stuff. But on the other hand, you have to trust something beyond that. So I think that was an interesting section of the chapter, but I actually tonight want to focus on the second part, which is this story of Guishan and the cow. So he talks about, this is a quote from Dogen from the Tenzo Kyokan, and it's on page 74. When you eat a grain of Luling rice, you may become the monk Guishan. When you add a grain, you may become the cow. Sometimes the cow eats Guishan. Sometimes Guishan pastures the cow. So this is one of those passages of Dogen, or, you know, there's other Zen teachings that are like this, which are just like, what, whatever. But, you know, he does unpack this for us a little bit. This does refer to an older story. So this is about a Chan master named Guishan, who one day said to his monks, 100 years after my death, I will be reborn as a cow, belonging to a parishioner near the skirt of this mountain. On the right flank of the cow will be written, I am Guishan. Now, if you say the cow is me, you are wrong, because it is just a cow. And if you say it is just a cow, you are wrong, because it will be me. So what should you say? So what is really going on here? Uchiyama explains some of this, fortunately for us, suggesting that the cow, in a way, can be seen as our body. And I would suggest not just our body, but also our phenomenal manifestation, our karma, our tendencies, our personality, our energies, our thoughts and feelings. And then Guishan, what is Guishan in the story? I mean, he's a Zen master. He represents someone who has awakened, and not only awakened, but actually to the point where he can teach other people. He can guide others. And really, he stands for the principle, the possibility of enlightenment, liberation, transcendence. So really, this koan, this question, is about what is Buddha nature, symbolized by Guishan, have to do with our small, phenomenal self? What does the Buddha Dharma, what does awakening, have to do with our everyday, mundane self and manifestation? So it will take us a little while to unpack this, but I wanted to, because I was going to have to teach this, right? I sat down with this little story, this first little part about Guishan and the rice, and the sometimes the cow eats Guishan, sometimes Guishan pastures the cow. So I thought about what do I think this might mean. So this is my translation for myself. And I don't think it's a translation that I'll stay satisfied with. This is just a translation I did this afternoon. And I think it was a good exercise. So this is the kind of thing I encourage people to do if you're ever intrigued by a particular passage, or you want to just challenge your practice in that way. So in this passage about eating some rice and you may become Guishan. So I was thinking, when I go about taking care of my daily life, that is when you eat a grain of luling rice, sometimes I manifest as a person of the way. Sometimes we become the monk Guishan. So certainly as we go about our daily life, there are times when we're awake, when we're on course, when we're manifesting in a conscious way, the Buddha Dharma. At other times, I'm not much different than an animal, being driven by my basic needs and desires. So this was, when you add a grain, you may become the cow. So sometimes I'm not much more than that. Sometimes I forget my aspiration. I'm just going about my daily life. I'm eating, I'm sleeping, I'm working, I'm concerned about myself. That to me speaks to that. It's just my small self-manifestation, and not to sound denigrating to animals, but it's not much more than just like being an animal. So sometimes my small, phenomenal, embodied self is sustained and supported by my practice, like good food or a healthy habit. So this is where sometimes the cow eats Guishan, was my thought this afternoon. So sometimes that small self is prominent, and practice seems secondary, like a good habit that is good to have, right? And it helps support that self. It helps expand the horizons of that self. At other times, my Buddha nature feels more prominent and includes everything in a magnanimous way, compassionately and wisely containing and taking care of my small self. So that sometimes Guishan pastures the cow. So sometimes that kind of sense of spaciousness or perspective is bigger, and it includes the small self. It's not just in service to the small self. There's less of a sense of division there. So in translating that question, the other part of the story with Guishan's questions to the monks about this cow being reborn as a cow, and is the cow Guishan, is the cow not Guishan? It made me think, maybe another way to phrase this, another version of the story, translation of the story, might be, I could say, in the future, I will suffer from dementia. I won't remember your name or be able to say a word of Zen. Will that old woman be Domyo or not? If you say no, what does that mean? If you say no, what essence of Domyo was lost? The body is still there. The karmic stream is still there. What? So you're saying that's not Domyo, it is Domyo. And yet, if you say yes, that is Domyo, something has changed. Something has been lost. So in the cow doesn't have, I mean, maybe at some really profound non-dual level it has Buddha nature, but it certainly doesn't have, it doesn't practice, it doesn't aspire to the Buddha way. So it's not Guishan in that sense that we were saying it. Guishan stands for the possibility of awakening, the possibility of enlightenment and practice. So there's something that the cow doesn't have that. And yet the cow is like Guishan's body. It's the result of Guishan. And at a deeper level, is the Buddha Dharma still there in my example about dementia? If my conscious effort to practice, my aspirations are no longer there, is the Buddha Dharma still there? And in a way, it's obvious how the cow is not Guishan. It's obvious how perhaps the person with dementia that doesn't remember much anymore is not me anymore. That's kind of obvious to us. And in a way, it's analogous to where is our awakened nature? Where is our Buddha nature when we are, when we're like the cow? When we're just caught up in our selfish sphere and dreams and desires and concerns, where is our awakened nature then? So it's, when you think of the cow, when you think of me as with dementia, where is the Buddha Dharma then? What is still there? And intellectually, we can't get our minds around this. It's not something that we can just figure out with our minds. Instead, it's something that we perceive directly in experience. We can see our thoughts, our feelings, our aspirations, our clarity, our mindfulness, mind states, all of these things come and go. They come and go on a moment-to-moment basis, on a daily basis, on a yearly basis, and then over the course of many years. So what does not come and go? What can we rely on and take refuge in? And immediately even asking that question makes us think, what remains constant? And yet it's not a thing. It's not a state. I guess it's, you can't even, you know, describe it, but it's things as it is. Things as it is will remain things as it is, whether I am demented or a cow. And all of those things that we might point to as the essence of me or the essence of Guishan or the essence of being awakened, none of those things are fixed. So in a way, none of those things can be lost. So this may all sound rather theoretical and philosophical, but I guess this is about how we see ourselves. It's about embracing radical non-duality so we can live a wholehearted, undivided life. What's the relationship between the Buddha Dharma and our small, mundane, daily self? So Uchiyama talks about, so this Guishan story is a very intriguing one. If I had to break it down, this is the way I would go about it. Generally, we assume that what we call ourself is some sort of fixed entity. Actually, though, there is no such fixed entity. Our metabolism is constantly changing, and our consciousness is always flowing. What then would it be that we call ourself? There is no concrete entity like the stone inside a plum, which we can call I. And yet, though we say that nothing is fixed, it is not a matter of ourself being non-existent. As in the story of Luling Rice, our self occurs at the juncture of what is relatively fixed and what cannot be fixed. The practice of the Buddha Dharma is the attempt to express life at that juncture where that which is fixed intermingles with that which is undeterminate or undefined. For this reason, it is difficult to understand. So then he talks about how practice is still necessary. So there's always this tension. There's always this, there's two sides. So we live, in a certain sense, we live by eating rice or whatever contains a certain amount of nutrition and which has a certain market price. At the same time, as we use our bodies to practice the Buddha's way of life, we give expression to the immeasurableness of the Buddha. But now, just eating rice does not guarantee that we are manifesting the infinity of the Buddha. For if we do not practice the way, our bodies are just lumps of flesh. Or we could look at it in the way the text puts it. When you add a grain, you may become the cow. If you eat food in order to do zazen, that is food for zazen. If you eat food in order to steal, it is just food for sustaining a thief. If you eat in order to go and sleep with a prostitute, it becomes rice for that purpose. To the extent that you do zazen with your body, the cow eats guishan. So, I feel like this has gotten kind of obscure, but I think for me, this, it helps to explore some of the places where we feel this duality. So, let's see if I can call up, I'm going to call up a document for us to brainstorm on and share it. Okay. So, as you go about your day in your private moments, so thinking about this in terms of really of yourself, when you are alone with yourself, where do you experience some duality? Where do you experience what later on Uchiyama talks about? It seems like two things, which is, I guess, ninyo is the Japanese term, instead of one, ichinyo. So he says, guishan and the cow look like two things, but actually they're one. So before we get to talking about the one, like where does it end up feeling like there are dualities? So I'm going to just start our list. Let me see. Let me make the font bigger for the sake of all of our eyes. So I would say aspiration versus actual behavior would be an example of where in my experience, in my personal experience, there's a sense of these two things, I guess being, if not opposed, then very different things. On the one hand, there are my aspirations for the kind of life I want to lead, the kind of person I want to be, the way I want to speak. And then on the other hand, there's this phenomenal self, this karmic package of tendencies and desires and concerns and behaviors ends up acting in a particular way. So I don't know if anybody's, please just go ahead and unmute yourself and if you can
think. I have one.
Yeah.
I think of this as when I'm around my mother. I have this like aspiration that I'm like, it seems like I don't know, to be a better person and calm and not get annoyed by things. And it's like, I don't know, I get like revert back to like being the daughter, reverting back to the daughter, or reverting back to, you know, behaviors that I don't like.
Would you say maturity versus immaturity?
Yes.
Like, you know, you're bigger than that.
Yeah.
You know, you should let it go.
Read fast and I don't know if that's what you meant.
But yeah, I think so.
That's something that comes right to mind.
Well, I don't know if this is what you meant either, but this is the first thing that came into my mind before you started, before you put up their aspiration versus actual behavior. What came into my mind was what it's like to sit down and practice Zazen, because like I was just out on my deck before the sun went down, I have the intention of staring at this geranium and feeling oneness and allowing my mind to be completely free, and yet at the same time, all of these things staying in my body. So that's the attention. But at the very same time, it is me looking at this geranium. Do you know what I mean?
And maybe even let go of separation.
Yes.
Versus meanness. Does that sum it up all right? Jinryu?
I'm thinking about that. It's the intention to let go of separation.
Versus there's just still a sense of self.
There's still a sense of me and it.
Mm-hmm.
So meanness works. There's not a sense of us, that's for sure.
Just on what Jill said, it's okay. Have I got the floor? Hello?
Yeah.
Sorry. Just on what Jill said, which you've translated as maturity versus immaturity. No, I'll let you do the verses because I'm no good at that. I can't. But I just think that for my Dharma practice, the relation more broader than maturity versus immaturity, relationships work is such a rich field. I don't know, what I call the relational self versus the things we cling to, our obstructions, fears. The three cliches that lead us to cling on to ourselves versus a sort of a more openness in relationship. And anyway, I'm talking too much.
No, not at all.
And can I just say on what Jill said, I have heard so many fellow practitioners use the relationship with their mother or their father. I read of someone, I'll be very quick here, I read of a woman who went away for 10 years to practice as a forest, in the forest tradition in Thailand. And she said, when she came back, she said, so the difference, 10 years of meditation meant that when we met up again at New York Airport, it would take 5 seconds for me to get in an argument, and it took 15 after 10 years of meditation in Thailand.
I like it.
Enough of that. It goes for fathers and sons. It goes for fathers and sons too. Sorry.
Thank you.
I could add something.
Yeah.
I mean, this is something I feel that happens so often in my daily life that it's almost, they almost just bleed together. I would describe it as like restraint versus indulgence. You know, when you don't want to, I know that if I have this salad and these vegetables, I'm going to feel better in the long term, but there's that part of me that just wants to just murder a pizza, you know, and just that is all, and that I give so many examples of that, you know, tension, you know.
Yeah, definitely. And I don't mean to badmouth animals, but, you know, I mean, that's kind of, I think about a, like horses, if you let them gorge on rich grain, they make themselves completely sick. You know, there's not restraint there. There's often not restraint with us either, right? But at least theoretically. And there's also that, you know, even beyond just kind of the self-discipline aspect of it, you know, I think if we really, whatever kind of indulgence we're doing, you know, there'll be moments of insight or enlightenment in our lives where we recognize how this is just, we're just trying to fill a hole with this substance or this experience. You know, so there's, we at times we can have a real, it's like, I don't want to do that. That's not going to solve what I really want to solve, but at the same time.
I think another one is when we unintentionally violate a precept. We have the standard that we set through the precepts, and then suddenly we realize that we're violating one. And the one I think of in particular is indulging anger. You know, you get mad. Check, it happened to me when I'm driving. I get really, really mad at other drivers and their inconsiderateness. And then, you know, you suddenly realize that you're feeding the anger. You aren't really actually serving any purpose. I've gotten better at saying, okay, leave it. you're doing it again. But still, I do it.
Yeah. And I don't know about you, but sometimes the harder that I, part of me wants to keep to a precept or something, the harder those habits, the more resistant those habits seem to be sometimes.
I have one, respond versus react. Where a response is a skillful action, a skillful means, and reaction is what I do normally.
And this really does seem to be, I mean, a lot of this is tied to our bodies. And I don't mean bodies as in, you know, somehow, you know, separate from mind and emotions, but it's a lot of this habituality, the reactivity, the self-concern. It's like, it feels, if it's not hardwired into us, it's definitely conditioned into us. And it's just, you know, it's there and it's very strong.
I think one for me, and I'm not sure this is right on the money, but I always seem to feel kind of a sense of duality when like, you know, you're in a job evaluation sort of situation and someone is talking about how they perceive like your body language. And so, you know, you have a sense of what you are trying to convey and how you're feeling internally, but then someone else tells you what their perception was of you. And so I know, like, from my point of view, like, I actually suffer from anxiety. So most of the time I'm like trying to calm down and not be terrified. But people tell me all the time they find me really, really intimidating. And I have a, I'm always shocked by that because I'm like, I'm scared of everything. Like, how am I intimidating? So that, like, that internal feeling that we have versus that perception that other people put on us, and that that can, at least for me, leads to a real sense of duality of like, I get to the point where it's like, I don't know what I'm doing because what I think what I'm doing is not how I'm being interpreted by others.
Yeah. And I would maybe say related to that is, I guess that sense of skillfulness, and the skillfulness is, you know, learning how to interact with others, teach others is the usual context, but certainly interact with others in a way that is, ends up having a good effect, you know, that ends up having, getting through to people or not making them defensive or blah, blah, blah. And that, the intention to be skillful can be very, very sincere. And then the reality, the reality of the outcomes of our interactions with others can often seem very, very, very different. I thought of, appreciative versus dissatisfied, wanting to really be present for and appreciative of each moment of my life, but darn it, this is happening. I don't like that's happening. I don't like that I feel this way.
I have one, I think. So I'm just going to call it gracious versus stingy. And by that I mean, you know, being in conversation with someone and responding to them in a, you know, a gracious way that you're hearing them, or just being really selfish and saying, well, just focusing on, I don't know, it's kind of an almost a childish reaction, I guess you'd say, being stingy in your response, only seeing your view kind of thing.
Yeah. Definitely.
Of another, contentment versus grasping. Being content with things as they are, rather than grasping for that which you don't have or perceive you don't have.
Do mindful versus fantasizing. It's like Guishan really intends to be mindful and present, but the cow is not all that interested. So, I thought this was a really beautiful section of this chapter where Uchiyama says, you are mistaken if you think it is best to throw away your body, in this case the cow, because you think it has no value. and just practice zazen, that is guichan. Our zazen becomes the Buddha Dharma precisely when it is functioning as this body in our daily life. There will always be that complaining and unsatisfied aspect of the self with which we have to deal. The Dharma is not going to become manifest only after we have somehow brought this aspect under control or stamped it out. The function of the Dharma and of Zazen is to care for the estuprous aspect of ourselves in the same way a mother lulls her baby to sleep. In other words, Guishan pastures the cow. I cannot help feeling that there is deep significance in the word pasture. So, wanted to go into breakout rooms for a few minutes and talk about what does it mean to care for that obstreperous aspect of ourselves in the same way that a mother lulls her baby to sleep. What does it mean to pasture the cow? When we look at that list of all of the things that are kind of on the cow side of the equation, the small self, the self-interested self. What does it mean to pasture the cow? Rearrange here a little bit. Right. I have to have my little spotlight on. Okay. Anybody hear anything interesting about how do we care for the obstreperous aspect of ourselves the way that a mother lulls her baby to sleep? Or that we pasture a cow? I guess for me, I think about acceptance. It's so easy to feel judgmental and impatient with this self. But I don't know. That's not helpful. Right? That's just like if your mother was trying to put the baby to sleep, it's not helpful to yell at it so it'll be quiet. It just doesn't help. So,
well, pasturing is self-care, and that's not indulgence. That's just accepting a gentleness of our own inherent goodness. So pasturing is husbandry. I mean, it's caring in a wider sense of the word.
Yeah, and I like how both the sense of putting out the cow out in the pasture, you know, it's like you're not trying to constrain or control the small self. You're letting it have some space, but it's still contained. You're not letting it just run, you know, rampant like a bull in a china shop or something, right? You're putting it out where it's safe, where it's going to have what it needs. They're there. And when I'm sitting zazen, and once again, my mind is, you know, caught up in some project or plan or blog post or whatever, you know, that sense of just recognizing that and recognizing that obstreperous self and saying, so that's how we are. Okay. And it, you know, it becomes more okay, more manageable. But at, there's another level at which these different aspects of ourselves, I guess, the mind that seeks the way, the mind of practice, and our obstreperous self. And as Uchiyama was talking about, they look like they're two things. Minyo. But they're actually one thing, Ichinyo. So there's an even more non-dual level to this, which is even more difficult to describe. Where it's just not separate. It's just, without sentient beings, there are no Buddhas. So as he was saying in that last section that I read, there's no point at which we're going to get rid of this self. We keep working on it. This is the polishing the tile thing, right? So to make a mirror. We keep working on it. That is our practice. That is our aspiration, is to be more skillful, wiser, more compassionate, etc. We never stop that. If we stop that, then we're just selfish, right? So we can't stop that. And yet, on the other hand, we're not going to make a lot of progress in this lifetime. At least not compared to, you know, a Buddha, at least not compared to our own ideals. We're really not going to make a lot of progress. This is the vehicle in which it happens. The cow is Guishan. And it, you know, there's no way to intellectually explain how that can be the case. It's really more of an experiential thing. It's really more of a really becoming familiar with the self, learning how to live in relationship with the self, so that there's not that tension, not that conflict going on all the time. And then in a moment of stillness, we see how this is it. This is us, and none of those things that we listed obstruct our Buddha nature in any way. None of them. None of our sins. None of our shortcomings are a deal breaker. None of them even detract. Which is a wonderfully liberating thing to perceive. Because then we can keep polishing the tile, right? But we know that we're actually more than okay. That we're not separate from who we want to be. So I will leave it there. And just do a closing first. We offer the merit of this study to all, so that we may be able to obtain the truth. All Buddhas throughout space and time, all honored ones, Bodhisattvas, Mahasattvas, wisdom beyond wisdom, Maha Prajna Paramita. Thank you all for being here.
Good night, all.
Good night.
Good night, everybody.
Sweet dreams. Thank you, Domio, and everyone.
Good night.
Being here, Ruthann.